Hey, and welcome back to Extra Features Energy Today. We have a fabulous guest who's still hot in California. Who can believe that? We have Barry J. in the house with his new horror film, Ashes. Welcome.
Thank you.
So I want to start right at the beginning of this film. Is this based on a true event, or is this something that occurred to you at a party? How do you get to this idea?
I put actual events at the beginning of the film, and I've been asked that a lot. And yes, it's actual events. I had an Aunt Marion. She was my dad's sister. They are both passed. When she passed away, the nursing home in Ohio called my sister and sent the ashes to her because she's next of kin. So that's what gave me the idea, because Aunt Marion was a bit of a character, and when we were growing up, I loved her. We all did. But when she wasn't around, if you spent the day with her, the family would be like, okay, what'd she do today? And there was always an Aunt Marion story. Yeah, she was. Every fact I mentioned about her in the movie is true. From not driving to no kids to, you know, she was the only one who moved away and married out of the religion at the time. And, you know, that was a big deal back then. And she just visited a couple of times a year, and she was just marched to her own drummer. And when the ashes got sent to my sister moved them from closet to closet, not knowing what to do with them. And I asked my mom, who does live with my sister, like in the movie, said, oh, she had her in my closet one day. I looked in there and found her. I yelled, get her out of there. I don't want her in my closet. So that's what gave me the idea of my sister moving from closet to closet, my mother being fed up, and I was like, this is hysterical. But I love horror. So I set out to write a horror movie, and Marion was angry. We left. Her ashes show up, and she gets at everyone who laughed at her. Bam. Simple. But along the way of writing this horror movie, some comedy came, because it's my family. I guess I can't write anything that's like my family without seeing the comedic factor. So that's it. That's a lot of the actual events. A lot of the facts about the family are very, very true that are mentioned. And the pictures at the end in the credits is my family and Aunt Marion.
I did watch them, so that's what I'm asking. I'm like, that's strange, but I'm going to have to ask. So you did decide on a one location picture. Until the almost of the
you know, end. As much as I wish I could say, yeah, that was my genius idea, I was three quarters of the way through and realized I had really not left the house.
No, you haven't.
And that became very convenient. So I sort of said, well, if I don't need to leave the house at this point, I should just try not to. I was actually kind of kicking myself. I was trying so hard to figure out how to do the scene with the boyfriend. And not have it in the house, and there was just no way to do it. Melanie had to move out. So that was the one, those two scenes in his apartment are the only things out of the house.
Correct.
Coincidentally, my family stays in the house a lot. They all congregate in the house. A lot of them live in the same house. And Marion would come and stay in the house. So it kind of fits the truth, to be honest.
So you were comfortable with that then. And as a director, you could see what shots you wanted just by real life that you dealt with every day.
Yeah. It was very, very similar to Aunt Marion visiting and just staying in the house. We didn't go on tours or, you know, take her out to dinner or anything like that. Everything was eating dinner at home, hanging out in the living room. She read. She watched TV. It really, like I said, my family just, my dad never went to the movies. You know, it's just, they weren't big going out people. They're homebodies.
That's okay.
So it was kind of easy.
So I want to discuss at the beginning of the film, the mom and daughter relationship. I thought the writing was nice. I thought it felt very real. I think that came from the heart. I really would argue with anybody saying, I think this is what really happened. He heard conversations or saw these conversations, and this is how you felt about them. And I really felt that relationship was real. And I did feel that way with the whole family, the daughter, the new dad. I felt they were all real people. Even we'll get to the other people later, but I felt they were real. I even felt Aunt Marion was real. You know, the way they talked about her and you telling me it's real. I thought that was great from you.
Ah, thank you. And that is kind of, you know, the voices, when I sat down to write and decided to keep the family dynamic just as it is, you know. We're a mixed race family. The sisters are very much friends, and they're very much conversationally friendly with my sister, their mom. It's a very close-knit group that has family meetings at the kitchen table, you know. So I just sort of, and the voices were in my head were so clear. I mean, it was really not hard. The actress who plays Camille actually looks like my niece, Danny. I actually sent her a picture after casting, and she says, "Oh, wow, well, Barry, that's freaky." They're both very beautiful. And Angelique is a wonderful actress. She's actually in my next film, Killer Therapy, as well. I just love her. The whole cast was great. I got very blessed that people who really brought the essence of my family to the screen.
Do people have the same problem maybe I did at the beginning, that we don't know if it's a comedy or a horror film? Because I don't read descriptions. I don't watch trailers. So I was kind of like, and then it obviously goes towards a horror film. So the beginning, were you trying to give me a comedy element just to get me settled, going, okay, get into this? Because I thought Aaron Marion at one point was going to be a joke, and it was going to be a comedy.
That's a really good question. You know, it came organically. I just didn't try to stop it, and I figured it felt like it flowed. You know, I don't think it was an all-out comedy. I think there was a lot of comedy in it, for sure. And I like that it kind of builds towards the horror. And, you know, and once it really kicks into gear with the spirit board and all that, there's no turning back.
Yeah.
And, but I sort of love that there's a lightheartedness to it. I love Drag Me to Hell. It's sort of the same thing. I remember the first time I saw that, I was terrified and screaming with laughter.
I could see that. I would totally give you that. You really set an ambiance, I find, when the film starts. You never let up on that creepy, eerie music. It's just pounding me constantly. And I'm like, okay, maybe it is a horror film. And then obviously it does descend into that. So that was your plan, just to keep that music coming? And also,
yes. Okay. Yes, and Ethan Arluck is a friend. I actually am good friends with his dad, and he was 8 years old when I met him, and now he's a 26-year-old musician who's able to score films. And it was a thrill to be able to use Ethan's talents in this. He's a great guy. We sat down. I gave him examples of my favorite movies for scores. I picked from Carrie and Evil Dead and Exorcist and Shining and Silence of the Lambs and even Hannibal. And I just kind of pointed out things I liked about each, and we talked about the mood and all that. So he was really great and really on it, and I sent him actual scenes from movies on YouTube of the kind of music I hear for each scene, and he was able to just really deliver in better than I ever dreamed. I mean, and he also does the music for Killer Therapy. We're like the whole same team. This movie moved into the next movie. We all had a great time making this movie.
Well, that's awesome. I also want to discuss your lighting.
Thank you, yes.
You never, like, in the beginning of the film, it's a little bit brighter, I thought. Like, I at least could see things. And then, again, the dissension starts. I really think you should change your name to Descending. Because I really feel that the darkness comes in more and more, and you make it darker.
Yes.
And you seem to have a great sense of style in lighting things I need to see. And not to jump scare me, just allow me to see things from different shadows, I guess, is what you were looking at. Is that what you were after?
That means a lot that you picked up on all that. Jay Lee, the cinematographer, is a friend and, to me, one of the best there is. He's absolutely a genius. He paints with light. When we got together to do the shot list, and mind you, it's my first film and not his. So he was my Yoda, and I was hopefully a Padawan willing to learn and listen. I tried to be. And he said, well, just tell me what you see. Tell me how you see it. And don't worry about how we'll get it done. I'll get it done. So, you know, we both love horror. He loves horror like I love horror. We could talk horror for hours. So it was easy to just say, you know, this is like the Evil Dead camera rush I want. You know, and stuff like that. And he knew exactly what I was talking about, the shadows, the silhouettes. You know, less is more. It can't be dark enough, I would say. You know, we talked about the teals and all that, you know, for color, and when Aunt Marion's around, I'd like to put her in. And it was a well-thought-out process, and it was really fun. And fun to do it with Jay, because he really knows. He just did the lighting and the cinematography. He just set it all up to, you know. And it pretty much, when we went into color correcting, Jay and I sat there and said, you're going to hear us say this a lot, darker. So we really he colored it the way it is with the lights, and then we kind of brought it down in post for darkness.
I thought so.
And okay. It just had a beautiful look to it, I think.
We're going to jump around a bit more. I want to discuss, sure. I discussed the spiritual advisors. I'm being a little vague because you know what
Chip
I'm talking about. They look like hipsters to me.
And they are.
And that was the plan, just to introduce a new dynamic at that point?
No, they are the only two who are not part of the real story.
Okay, I didn't think they were.
Yeah, they don't really exist. They actually came from another script of mine, which I just sort of... It was one of those scripts where, like, I did it, wasn't over the moon about it, but I always loved Chip and Ronnie. And I said, one day I'm going to pull them out of that script and put them in something else. So I just thought, as long as we're in the house and we've got nothing but the family, and, you know, the family's a lot, I just thought it would just kind of break things up. A little bit of more comedy. I wanted them... You know, this is failed attempt after failed attempt. They keep trying to solve this problem, you know, and I thought you would definitely get a paranormal expert. At some point in this day, in this life, you would dig up somebody who's a paranormal expert. So I just dragged Chip and Ronnie out of the script. I had an Uncle Ronnie, so he's named after him, and Uncle Ronnie had a dog, Chipper, and that's where Chip came from. And my dad used to call me Chip off the old block, so that's how I got Chip. And that's it. I just liked them as characters. I liked the crazy 800 commercial that where they pick them from, and I like that they show up as, you know, on the commercial as goofballs, and when they arrive at the house, they realize that this is serious business, and they're not goofballs. You know, so
I have a question: when these two guys would show up at your house for a paranormal activity, are you not tossing them out 30 seconds later going, "These no, not what I'm looking for"?
You know, it's funny because, you know, preferences of people are self-subjective. And I try to think that Camille and Melanie would like these two guys.
I agree. But I wouldn't, as the mom. I want Zelda from Poltergeist to show up at my house.
Yeah, right? you know, she was against it. She even called them goofball. I think she was doing it to appease her daughters. And that she would always do. She would always give her daughters a chance.
She did. Let's go back to a little bit. I'm going to go into the film a bit more. The box of ashes alone. Is that based on a real box of ashes you received, or that was just an envision you
had? That is Aunt Marion in the opening scene, and she is in that box. They open it up, and that was my paying homage to Aunt Marion. And Marion did arrive in that very box, which I still have, but one of the nicer boxes that I used in the movie. Aunt Marion is in that box now. And she's in a glass case behind me, hi, Marion, in my office. And that's why I dedicated the movie to her at the end. This was actually my way of saying, I love you, Aunt Marion, and here's your side of the story.
Wow, okay. So you go through a lot of boxes of ashes. Certain things happen during the film, and boxes of ashes fall over.
Yes.
How many boxes of ashes were used, and what did you use to make the ashes?
Tasha Lee Moth, our prop master, made the ashes. She told me what it was. It was a bunch of different things. And for the sake of the comedy of it, you know, the ashes needing to really go all over the place when they dropped, it was more of a powdery substance. But I think all in all, it works. And the idea of at that point, you know, dropping Aunt Marion is just, you know, par for the course with what's been going on.
This may be a strange question, but I'm going to bring it. Has Aunt Marion ever gone to a festival screening of the show, of the movie?
Aunt Marion?
Yes.
No, she's dead.
No, no. Did you take her ashes to the theater to show her the movie?
Oh, no. I did not. I have not. I did, of course, have her on set, and the couple that owned the house that we were renting, lovely couple, I became friends with them. They did ask that I not leave Aunt Marion there overnight. We could leave all the other equipment, all of that, everything was fine, but please take your aunt.
Did they ever give you a reason why, or is they just were not comfortable?
I guess they were just not comfortable, and I kind of understood. I mean, I guess it's my dead aunt, you know? I liked having her around. On the inside of my script, you know, notebook, the first page said Aunt Marion's son for my name. Aunt Marion's nephew.
You do a scene, and I have to ask this based on reality, when Aunt Marion scares him with the mask. Did you make that
When she gets scared by Uncle Jay, young Uncle Jay with the mask?
Yes. Did that happen?
So I'll tell you what happened. The first half happened. I used to hide in the closet. So I'm Uncle Jay, in case you haven't figured that out. Barry Jay. My sister's middle name is Ellen. My mother's middle name is Caroline. So that's where I got their names. So I used to hide in the closet and knock on the door from the inside. And I would watch Aunt Marion through the crack in the door go downstairs and answer the front door. And I just thought that was so funny. And then she would catch on after, you know, she'd hear me laughing or something. She'd open the door and say, oh, cut it out, Barry.
Ah.
Get out of there.
So it sounds like Aunt Mary is a lot of fun.
But then I would do it again. Yeah, she would do, and she would answer the door because she was such a character. I don't know what told me that this would work, but I did it. I once took my friend in the closet and said, watch what happens, and I did it, and she was cracking up. So I did not jump out with a mask, and she did not have the result that she had in the movie.
I gotta ask. I feel that your movie's based on, like you told me it's based on real life, so I'm going to ask. It feels like you're going after a ghost story. So I want to ask, do you like ghost stories? Is that your preferred genre?
I love ghost. I love all horror. I mean, I love, you know, if it's a slasher film done right, I love it. You know, I love Halloween. I love zombie movies like Night of the Living Dead, you know, and I do love ghost stories. I love Insidious. I love Poltergeist. You know, I love Evil Dead. I love all sorts of ghost stories.
So, being a first-time director, and I obviously you're going to your favorite genre, what was the most difficult thing you found to learn?
The most difficult thing I found to learn was, I mean, you really are, especially with lower budget horror, you're on a time schedule. We did good. We kept on schedule, even ended early a day or two. But it's always in the back of your mind. Like, I don't have all day to do this. For the ashes scene where they drop them, I only had one take. Like, it was like, this has to work, guys. This has to work. And because it took too long to clean it up all over again, get all the ashes off of everybody, and then start over. So we didn't have the time. So that was a learning thing. Like, you know, you have all these big dreams, and they either cost money or take time.
Oh, absolutely, it does.
Yeah.
Your lead actress, I would say, has the most work to do, the lifting of the film.
Yes.
She has one scene where she has to kind of regurgitate something out of her mouth, which I'm not going to ruin, so I'm going to tell you. How did that go?
You know, we were going to do a practical effect of having it from the side of her, you know, the head that you can't see, and make it look like it was regurgitating from her mouth.
It looked like it was coming right out.
She said, no, let me just put it in my mouth. She goes, I hate that stuff. I don't like it. And if I put it in my mouth, it'll absolutely gross me out, and it'll be fantastic. I said, I love you. let's shoot this.
Because I was wondering, because she did not look comfortable in that scene at all.
No, she hates that stuff, and she hates it in her mouth, and yeah, but it was her idea. I did not ask.
She has a little bit of a change in appearance as the film goes on.
Yeah.
And I wasn't sure if you had to doctor her hair.
We did.
Now, was she okay with that?
She was. So my sister has, characteristically to her, very long hair. Like, the whole family's always like, cut it, cut it. It's like, you know, down below, you know, near her stomach. So I didn't go that far, even though I was thinking about it. So it starts out with extensions. So Elizabeth Keener's hair could be longer than it was. And then also that helped out because we have that scene where she cuts her hair because her hair is precious to her. Her nails are precious to her.
Yep.
So, and Marion was kind of having fun, you know. So yeah, but then her hair started turning gray like Aunt Marion's, and Marion wanted her to know what it was like to be her.
Yeah.
So.
That's evident. The Ouija board scene.
Yeah.
Being a big fan of horror films, how was working with the Ouija board? That's always where the bad things happen.
Okay, so as much as I love horror, I'm good with dolls, I'm good with clowns. I mean, you know, I can watch slasher movies till the cow comes home. But possession and Ouija boards or spirit boards, because Ouija is a brand name.
Sorry.
They creep me out. They creep me out. That honest attempt to connect with the dead from beyond and possession, like The Exorcist, actually freaks me out. I love it. It's a genius horror film. But it really does spook me for the devil to possess somebody.
How is working with the board? Because you really got a nice color on it. Start off with a nice, clean spirit board.
Yes.
A really beautiful color on it. How was that achieved?
You know, that was Tasha Moth again. And it just, I wrote in the script that, you know, please use a cutting board. Because that's the idea, is that my sister, this is exactly, I'm telling you, I know my sister, what she would do. She wouldn't go out and buy one. She would take a cutting board she hasn't used in years and just make one. And she just would rather do that and not spend the money. So the cutting board lent itself to that look, you know, that wood cutting board. And she did a really great job of carving out the letters and using Sharpie to fill them in. And it really just worked. I mean, there were times where we were watching the Video Village, we were watching the monitor when we were shooting just the board. And listening to the dialogue, and we're all saying, this is really interesting. There's an argument to say you could do this scene just watching the board.
I agree.
Yeah, it's really cool. To use an egg slicer, just give it a whole cool look.
You kind of shoot it as we're watching just the board, because a lot of times we just see a hand movement. You do, I would say, a couple panaway shots of the family, but mostly it's just the hands. And I think that adds a lot more development because we're not seeing faces. We're not seeing emotions. We're hearing them talk, but we can't see them. And I think it works really well for that.
Thank you. Thank you. And that was just born from seeing it. You know, we knew we'd have a couple of shots that we had to shoot it. And we're like, wow, this is just really like pulling me in, just watching the board and hearing the voices. And we're all on board with it, no pun intended.
Who did the makeup?
Laura Liefring and Sue St. Clair. Sue St. Clair was the assistant and Laura was the key head of the department. They work together a lot. They are absolutely wonderful as people and remarkable talents. They also worked on Killer Therapy. They're such a great team. I would call them Laura Sue. they're like one person, but they're phenomenal. I mean, I sent Laura pictures of, you know, looks I like to help create Aunt Marion, you know, or Ellen, at the very end stage and talked about what a Marion should look like. And again, they delivered like 110%. You know, they absolutely nailed it.
I would be amiss if we didn't discuss the theme song near the end of the film. Or maybe it's at the very ending credits. Where does that come from?
So I wrote the song because I could, and I hadn't written a song in a long time. That's my friend Blair singing, her brother Gray, and this other guy produces the track. She sang a lot of my country demos way back then. And honestly, for the credit song, that is nothing more than me just having a good time. It sort of sums up, the lyrics sums up the movie.
It does.
You know, and yeah, it just kind of sort of sums up the entire point of view for Ed Marion. And that's it. I just felt like doing a song, but I'm done. I didn't do any songs for Killer Therapy.
I always like to ask this question. Because you're a small production, how was catering? How did you do that?
So there are certain areas where I just absolutely refuse to cut corners or watch pennies. And that is the catering for the staff, the cast and the crew and everything. So we actually had really, really, really good food. Rodini Park. I had a catering friend of mine do one night. I forget the name of the other place, but they were also really good. And we had breakfast for everybody every morning. We had, you know, all sorts of bagels and stuff like that, which wasn't even required, but I just wanted people to show up and have a lot to choose from, fruit, healthy things. And all of the cast and crew were always thanking me for, like, you know, this is so a cut above the average crafty and, you know, and dinner. This is like really full, hot meals. And then, of course, you know, if there was anything extra, they got to take it home and whatnot. We all did it. but it was great. They really loved it. I'm just a big believer in we're all working together and we need to be fed and we need to be happy and feel, you know, feel like we're being, you know, given the respect and the treatment that we deserve for the hard work.
Just to finish up, how was the casting process? Do you know when you were starting your first film who you were going to cast, or you had to have opening casting calls?
I did have an open casting call. That's how I found, I would say, half. I know Casey. He's a friend, and I knew he would be Chip, the blind one. And then Casey said, my friend Umari is a great actress. She's a friend, and she takes classes with me. I said, send her in. And she blew. You okay?
Yeah, I'm fine. It's just the end of my cold.
She just blew everyone out of the water, and I just loved her. She just was my niece to me. You know, she sounded like her inflections, everything, and she was so natural. Elizabeth Keener is a friend. We were neighbors for 10 years.
Oh.
That's how we met. And then when I first co-wrote The Chosen, and my friend Ben and I wrote it together, and he was directing, I said, I think I can get Elizabeth to play the lead, and she did. And she's also in Killer Therapy. So she's now been a mom in three of my movies, and it's sort of become a thing when she shows up. She's like, all right, what are you doing to me in this movie?
Yeah.
So there's a lot like that. Laura Liefring, the head makeup, her roommate plays Ronnie, the other paranormal guy. And I believe the rest were, and then there was a couple that were clients of my friend, Carl Rumba, and Carl is the executive producer. And he said my client, Damien, would be, you know, great for Ty, and my client Jeremy would be great for Dwayne. So that's where Jeremy Earl came from. So it all just, and the rest was auditions. Angel just blew me away. Melinda Decay came in, did a great reading, but I said, can I hear you do your best evil laugh? And she just filled the room. And I was like, should we just send everybody home? Because this is Aunt Marion. So I feel very, very lucky to know some wonderful people and to have found some wonderful people.
Well, that's good to hear. Now it's time for everybody's favorite part of the show, because I know you're prepared for fun questions.
Yes.
even I'm gonna your favorite film. I'm sure it'll be a horror film.
Uh huh.
But I don't know which one.
Okay. So this is. I refuse to pick an absolute favorite because I go back and forth so many times. Night of the Living Dead or Halloween, and I absolutely can't decide.
I would take Halloween, and that would be an easy choice for me. I love Halloween. One of my favorite. I love Night of the Living Dead, but I think Halloween is just awesome.
They're both so groundbreaking to me, and both directors.
I agree.
I mean, John Carpenter is he's a master, but so is George Romero.
Yes.
You know? And I could do this all night, by the way. I drive myself crazy. I cannot pick between the two.
Fair enough. This might be a hard question for you to answer. One film you've never seen and should have.
One film I've never seen and should have. Wow. One film I've never seen and should have. Blood. Oh, what's it called? Oh, it's like... this really popular cult film.
Blood Simple?
Yes!
The Coen Brothers film.
Yeah, I've never seen it.
You can add me to that list, too. I've not seen it, which is shocking.
So many people have told me to see that.
So have I. I'll probably get to it at one point. I'm pretty good about cleaning up my list every once in a while, and if I get enough, I'm like, I'm going to watch these.
2001, A Space Odyssey.
I have seen it.
I have never seen it.
You're not missing anything. Beautiful to look at, but you can watch it at home with no sound and be fine. That's all. It's just beautiful film.
Okay.
Now, because you live in LA, I love to ask this question. What's the most famous person you've met?
Oh, God. I don't even know how to say this without sounding too LA or not humble. I've met a lot.
Oh, good.
Darren, Chris. I'm just going by recent. I met Alanis Morissette. I met Jamie Lee Curtis. I met Bernadette Peters.
I love Bernadette Peters.
Oh, she's absolutely fabulous. I met Kristen Chenoweth.
Like her too. Great singer.
I've just met so many. I can go on and on. Jane Krakowski.
Yeah. Look at you go. Well, thank you for answering all our questions. I hope you had fun. Tell everybody where they can find your film, please.
You can find Ashes on iTunes, Amazon, Redbox, and the like. There's a bunch of others. I played to Shudder or whatnot. We're trying to get it out there.
Well, great. And is your next film ready to be released, or is it out yet?
We are having the screening of Killer Therapy on October 16th. At Warner Brothers in one of their screening rooms. The film has in it some of our horror favorites like PJ Souls, Tom Matthews, Return of the Living Dead, Friday the 13th, Part 6, and Adrian King, the original Friday the 13th, Dave Ferch from Rob Zombie's Halloween, Ivy George from Big Little Lies and Paranormal Activity Ghost Dimension, and a bunch of others. So I was like a kid in a candy store.
I would think so with that.
Horror actors. Well, oh my God, I was freaking out. I mean, I would like run around the streets going, PJ Souls is in my movie. Yeah.
Well, thank you for your time and have a great night.
Thank you.
Goodbye.
I'm sorry?
Have a good night. Thank you. Goodbye.
Thank you.
Hey, I just want to say thank you for listening to this great interview. We have more on our website at www.extrafeatures.ca. And if you enjoyed it, can you please go to iTunes and leave us an iTunes review and like us on our Facebook page. Thank you.